Thank you for joining the Mini PC Show. My name is Brian Thomas, here to offer you Big Talks with Little Machines. Here we are with Door-to-Door Geeks from Podnuts.com and Eric Ardini from App Addicts. Guys, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm going crazy. It's just super busy this week. It seems like it's been super busy a lot of weeks lately. But I just got over being sick, so that didn't have me down, so I'm still playing catch-up on all that because I took a couple days off work to try to recover. And just a lot of traveling coming up. Loving it, though. I love the weather. We had a bunch of tornado warnings last night, so tons of lightning, and so that's got the grass growing a little faster now. And yeah, spring is here. I like it.
Absolutely. Stuff's getting better. Stuff's getting better every day. And it's good to stay busy, too, as well. I'm feeling that 100%. Dor, my friend, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. All things considered, and the all things considered is I took the wife this morning to the airport. Her and her sister are taking a multi-trip mini vacation to Las Vegas. So it's just me and the boys here. And, you know, people say, you know, this is the time you can enjoy it. Sit on the couch with your underwear, watch Star Wars, whatever, without any worries of nagging or anything. But I think I'd rather have my wife.
Yeah, I feel that pain, too. I agree with that. It's tough to go to bed by yourself at night.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say I've been trying to distract myself. I'm still running Ubuntu 1604, I believe it is, on my Odroid C2. Unbelievably good is the thing I will say. My son, I think I actually have him convinced. I think we are going to do a project here. He wants to build a arcade machine, quote unquote. Of course, not a full size one, of course. He wants to be able to like carry it around to other people's houses or over his grandfather's, put it on a table and play it. So I've asked him to start drawing up as many ideas as possible. Then I pointed him to YouTube to look up custom MAME cabinet or custom MAME computer, stuff like that. And he's getting other ideas and he's refined how he wants it to look. My logic is the way we're going to do it is we're going to first get the drawings how we want it to be, get a rough idea of what kind of components we're going to need. My logic is then you literally go out and buy the electronics and the screen so you know how big to make the holes in the wood. And then his grandfather, my father-in-law, he owns all the tools to cut the wood, sand the wood, route the wood, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to get him to help out as well. It should go well. And the real thing is my son wants to not play arcade games on it. He does not want to play Minecraft on it. He wants to basically also make his own games for
it. That's awesome. That is pretty awesome. I don't mean to cut you off, but dads out there, pay attention. This guy is an awesome dad, and I commend you.
It's awesome if I can encourage him enough to follow through with it without being a nag to him. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that to me is a very hard line to walk. I don't want to be that nagging guy.
Yeah.
Because I do expect there will be more than a couple of days where he just won't have it in him to do any work on it. And I don't want to push him too hard for it, but I also want him to know it's really cool to finish this.
Mm. Now, did he bring that up to you, you said, or did you bring this to his attention?
It really was him because I showed him my little GPD handheld gaming system. And then he's seen arcade machines in the arcade. And he said to me, what's the difference between them? Mm. I said, well, not a whole lot. They're basically both computers with buttons and screens. And then he said, well, why can't we make one? I said, well, we can. He said, well, why haven't we? I said, because you haven't told me yet.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So my logic is in 3 or 4 weeks, we'll actually start to get some momentum and get the things ordered, because if we're going to have to order everything first, we're going to have to take that, I don't want to say slow and steady, but we're going to have to be very exact with what we buy and know ahead of time what it is.
Yeah. Cool. Cherry MX switches, stuff like that, you're thinking?
I don't know. This is where I'm going to have to lean on my friend Cody Cooper, who is a arcade machine enthusiast in the hardware side of it. He knows what the good buttons are. He knows what the good joysticks are. I'm going to have to lean on him for that. Now, the actual computer probably is going to be an Odroid C2 or Raspberry Pi 3 for simplicity. The screen is going to be determined on, well, how big of a screen does he want and how big of a screen can we afford?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he did say he wanted to look into a coin slot, which I probably said, slow down, Roy Rogers. Let's first get the thing working. If we get it working, then we can always go back and add a coin slot.
That's true.
Look, you're gonna need to have a square card reader. Come on, you know.
Right. Well, he's thinking about how he can take it over to his cousin's house and basically charge them money.
They got a debit card. He's
play
in.
Games. Yeah.
That's funny.
I just have to say, just encourage him. He's going to be in it for the long haul. It sounds like it's going to be a long project. So try to encourage him. I did the same thing. My sons actually came up to me a while back and said, "Dad, let's build a robot." And I'm like, "How am I going to build a robot? You know, I'm pretty handy, but I'm not handy enough to build a robot." So I went to a website, the MakerBlock website, and ended up getting a robot for $80, I believe. Yeah, I think it was $80. And it's this little blue metal frame box. Got two wheels and two drivers on the back of it with a Arduino board and a little battery pack. You put it together like a piece of Legos. They all did the work. They all put it together, and you use Scratch to make it move around on the floor. And you can either get a USB. Excuse me. You can get a Bluetooth wireless radio, or you can get a Wi-Fi radio. I ended up getting the Bluetooth radio, and it works awesome. You know, they get to program using Scratch. They get to put this wonderful piece of kit together. And I just thought it was a really good thing. He's, you know, telling all the teachers and telling his friends, "We built a robot."
That is cool, man.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome.
Dor, are you thinking battery powered at all on this or for his?
You know, to me, it's going to be directly determined how big of a screen he is. Because to me, if the screen's too big to have a battery power, we're either going to need too big of a battery, or it's going to need to be charged too often. So I don't know. I'm hoping I can keep him to 7 inches or smaller, because then I know we can do a portable battery pack.
That sounds like a fun project. Good job, Brian, on yours, man. I don't know enough about building, and my kids are older now, so we didn't have the easy kits. Well, I'm not saying yours is easy, but we didn't have any kits that didn't require soldering and stuff that I can think of. But they didn't ask me to build a robot either. We got some
very cool. Do you guys want to do the emails? Because we are still doing the Pi 3 giveaway. We already have about 10 entries, I want to say, from emails and voicemails. We do have more, and I do think one person we technically have on this list twice, and that is Captain Zero.
What an awesome name!
Yeah,
Captain Zero. I take my hat off to you, sir.
That would be Captain Hat is Taken Off Zero.
Captain Binary. He's only one, not even a bit.
There's always a little something in between the Captain and the Zero with him. Hey, do you want to read them, Brian? Or do you want me to? Or did you like how we did it last time? I'm easy.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Good. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Let's start off.
Okay, our first one's from Jeff H. And Jeff says, "Howdy, guys. I've been listening to your shows on the Podnuts Network for a while, and this mini PC series hits the spot. Just a week after my frenzied attempts to order just one of the new Raspberry Pi 3 models from MP3 on release day, two additional units arrived at my door. Yes, I had already received my first one a few days before, yet this two more surprised me. I reviewed my account with them. Yes, I have one. I was charged shipping charges of $7.99 each, way too much for two units, which should have shipped together in a box. I agree with your comments that MCM is not winning customers over, as I'm ankle deep with their catalogs and email. So on to putting these things to use. I replaced my Kodi XBMC Media Center Raspberry Pi 2 with the Raspberry Pi 3 and found excellent performance running OpenELEC 603. The videos and music stream from an old Pentium 4 dual-core 4GB RAM from USB 3 drives. Noisy fans and drives live in another room. There's always been a slight buffer experience when choosing a video, but the Raspberry Pi 3 reduces this by nearly 70% in my humble opinion. With these new models in my hands, I'm thinking of upgrading some of these old dusty Raspberry Pi models working as security cameras, music MPD, G-Media renderer, and SSH jump box, a.k.a. poor man's VPN using S-Shuttle. The use of one as a garage door controller, episode 10, sounds like a fun build to try, but it absolutely must be meet spousal approval factor, SAF. I like the SAF. I also carry a Raspberry Pi with me in my backpack, as I like to have one to act as a sharing server, a.k.a. pirate box. But mine is running Arch Linux ARM with G-Media renderer for playback to external speakers. This hardware upgrade can also show how well Kodi works at my monthly LUG meetings. What's LUG? Linux User Group?
Linux User Group, yeah.
I just can't get enough of these things. Keep up the great discussions, guests, and reviews. Wow. Tell you what, man. Thanks for... There's some great ideas there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And the thing that caught my eye was an old Pentium 4 dual core with 4 gigs of RAM and USB 3. Okay. Let me tell you something. 4 gigs of RAM is probably the most that processor can take. So he has that thing maxed out. And Pentium 4 USB 3... Wow. Or is it USB 3 different drives? I don't know. If it is USB 3, he is taxing that processor, man. He is killing it.
Yeah, I don't know if they're just USB 3 external drives, maybe. I'm not sure.
Or if it's three drives that are USB 3. I don't know. But I got to say, I'm happy. I'm really happy to hear there's an obvious difference between the 2 and the 3 when it comes to video playback. Because to be honest, that's what I think most of the people who get a Pi 3 use it for, is a home theater front end box.
Yeah, I need.
Now,
how much
of a difference is that?
Well, it depends on what numbers you look at. It is up to, they say, a 50% increase in processing power. It depends which benchmarks you look at as well. Some people show like a 30% increase in speed, while some people show upwards of 70%. But it all depends on the benchmark. If you're doing something that is taxing the processor, I believe you'll see a difference. If you're just doing little stuff, I don't think you'll see a big performance. But I have seen more than a couple videos with people saying their Raspberry Pi 3 is almost like a desktop experience. I can tell you, my experience is still that the Droid C2.
Mm-hmm.
Kindly blows it out of the water for that.
Wow.
Does the C2 have built-in Wi-Fi? I couldn't remember.
Nope. No built-in Wi-Fi, no built-in Bluetooth.
Do you think that helps the processor having it on board, or hurts it, you think, on the Pi 3 versus using them externally via USB?
Well, via USB, you're then limited to the speed of the USB. Also, then the operating system, the kernel, has to support the Wi-Fi module, and it might not support it good, it might support it great. So with the Raspberry Pi 3, you're guaranteed to see more stable Wi-Fi per performance, just because people know what to code towards. Also, if it's a USB, you might see a power, an extra bit of power that is needed to actually power it. So if you're using it like intensely under Wi-Fi, you probably could see out of the box better performance. But on the Odroid, if you take your time, you do the research, you buy a really well supported Wi-Fi adapter, and you put a good antenna on it, I'm sure it will be competitive.
Thanks, Dor. I appreciate that. Well, the next email we have is from Stephen Ward. Stephen, thank you for the email, and says, "Hi guys. Love the show, especially the theme, which makes me smile every time. I bought the original Raspi Model B 2 years ago with the idea of making it into an internet-connected jukebox radio. My day job includes automating a radio station. Some I have software skills in that area, but I had some. I had so many problems getting the hardware sound any good. In the end, I decided to put it into... I decided to put inside a new obsolete DVD player. I gutted the disc reader and control board, but kept the power board as it had a nicely labeled 5-volt output that I could power both the Pi and USB hub. The slot where the DVD tray used to be needed just a little filing and some surgu to be used to hold 4 USB ports, and I even hooked up some RGB light strips to the GPIO ports with the idea of doing a poor man version of ambient light. While the Pi was my main home theater PC for a long time, I never completed the project to my satisfaction. I could have wired it up the original play, pause, etc. buttons on the front, but I couldn't be bothered with, as I'd never used them. I had a IR sensor hooked up and configured to run with the original DVD remote, but it was so slow compared to the wireless keyboard, so I just pulled it out. Right now, it sits in my bedroom with some speakers hooked up to it. It will eventually be a cool alarm clock, which can speak the weather and encourage me and my wife to wake up. But so far, it just plays. The best of the Shaggy to itself is as a demo, and I never seem to have the time to work on it. To sum up, I love the Pi and would love to have more mini PCs, but I just don't seem to have enough time. Keep up the good work, Steve.
Well, I'm sorry the giveaway does not entail more time.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for the email. That's a good use of an old, you know, external DVD, or I don't know, it was an external one, internal one. Just routing it out. Yeah, that makes me think, you know, there's stuff laying around all over the place here that a Pi or something could fit inside of to be retro-ish, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the home theater PC is a no-brainer. I mean, everyone knows about that, but I never thought about using it as an alarm clock. You know, that's a really good idea.
Well, yeah, because on the alarm clock, there's the functionality, the interactions you need with it are so little. All you need is the ability to set the time, set the alarm, turn the alarm on, and snooze, and that's it.
Right.
You know, everything else can be programmed or play off a playlist or something like that. So I really do like the idea of that. I would like to know if there's like customized software ready for that, because that would be pretty fantastic if you get like a Pi and just a small screen. You don't need a special big screen for this. You just need a little one. That to me is really genius, especially if the software, like he's saying, allows you to say, well, point toward this information for the weather, and when the alarm goes off, tell me the weather. You know, point towards this feed, and then tell me this in the morning. That, to me, is genius.
Absolutely. Tell me something encouraging that both my wife and I would be able to get up to. Mm-hmm. That's a really good idea. Yeah. And you don't have to go overboard. You don't need a Pi 3. You don't need a Pi 2. You can go, you know, with the 512 model, you know, the Raspberry Pi.
Oh, yeah, you can go with the B, the Zero, and Orange Pi. All it needs to do is not lose a lot of time overnight.
Right.
You know what I mean? As long as the clock ticks at a normal interval, yeah.
If you had the Pi running on the internet as an alarm clock, but you actually had a regular OS on it, then could you use, like, if this, then that, to say at this time, pull this, and then do a voice dictation of whatever words it finds from National Weather Service, you know, a website maybe?
Absolutely.
Well, what I could see is if this, then that, getting that weather information, doing the voice to text thing, but I don't know if there's necessarily timed if this, then that. Cool. I've never actually thought about that. I mean, I'm already logged in because I'm an addict for if this, then that. And if I just put in time, date, time. So if I click on date, time, connect. Oh, it's a, so I have to now pick my time zone. Dude, if this, then that is awesome. Done. And then I say continue to the next step. Clues, and here's my triggers. Every day at, every hour at, every day of the week at, every month at, or every year on. So you can say every day of the week at this time, do this kind of thing. So yeah. And then it's just a question of where you get the input for that. And there's plenty of text-to-speech things out there. Some of them are better, some of them are worse, but there's definitely ones out there. So yeah, this doesn't sound like rocket science whatsoever.
All right, there you go, Steve. Cool. Good luck on that one, man. Keep them big speakers hooked up to it so it makes sure it wakes you guys up, though. You can't just let it, you know, do its thing, not loudly. Then that wouldn't be an alarm clock. You gotta have the alarm for it to be an alarm clock.
True.
Yes.
Yeah, and next we actually have a voicemail, and it's actually two voicemails, and they're long. These are from Aaron Turnbull, our friend in Oregon. Oregon. I believe it's Oregon, and I really hope I said that right. He has a Octoprint server connected to his, pointed at his 3D printer. Thus, he can, anytime he wants, look at the webcam pointing towards that and see what kind of activity is going on his printer. I do believe there's actual ways to actually schedule jobs, too, on that for your 3D printer. But he's using the original Raspberry Pi 1. So the resolution on it is really low. The speed on it is really low. There's some functionality he can't do because of the age of the hardware. So he openly is attempting to bribe us. He basically insinuated anything we need printed, we let him know, and he'll be happy to do it for us. Especially if he gets the Raspberry Pi 3.
Aaron knows us well. An open bribe, that's pretty much how it works, right?
No comment. Okay.
No comment.
That's all right. I guess I'm the only politician in the room. Never mind. Mm-hmm. All right. Our next email is from Crystal. Crystal says, I heard on the latest podcast that this website contact form is the place to enter your Raspberry Pi giveaway. I would like to be added. My name's Crystal Anderson. I love the show. Looking forward to getting an Odroid C2 and hopefully do something with Plex Media Server. I wish they would have better ARM support rather than having to use the NAS device code. This email was sent from podnuts.com.
I'd have to say, cool. Crystal is our first female email person that we've had on the show. And a little golf clap. Thank you, Crystal. Appreciate very that. Cool.
Yeah, I will say that to me is the only flaw with the Plex Media Server is it does require some oomph. It does require some processing power because it wants to transcode everything to custom match the bandwidth that it has to push the show. So it does require a little bit more work, a little bit more engine power, which unfortunately also does mean it's going to require a little bit more coding and upkeep. Right now, the ARM support for it is not great. I'm still a huge fan of the service, but yeah, as a Plex front end, it works decent.
As a player. Okay. Client. That's the word I was thinking of.
yes, the opposite of server.
Yes. Well, our next email is from Larry Dupree. Email says, "Hey guys, if you're still accepting submissions for the Raspberry Pi 3 giveaway, I would like to throw my name in there as well. Thanks for the great show, Larry. Larry, we appreciate your ballot, and we will add your name to the giveaway."
Yes, a very succinct email.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Oh yeah, I agree. Trust me, because some of these emails I literally opened up and I looked at and I said, Mark is unread. Oh, I got to sit down and read this later because there's too long for me to just sit there and read.
All right, our next email. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it needs to be an elevator pitch.
Yeah. Our next, until we get, when we don't have a, you know, when we don't have a giveaway, I suppose we'll want the longer emails again. We'll get into some substance, but that may not ever happen on this show. So, Dave Parker emails in, give me a pie, please. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Dave Parker says, on your show today, Eric mentioned he wasn't sure why people would want the Chromecast audio. Well, good. Thank you, Dave. The reason it's compelling is because you can have multiple units hooked up to various sound systems in the house, and apparently they will automatically synchronize one stream so you can hear a playlist all over the house. So, e.g., if you have three set up at $45 each, for $135, you now have the functionality that's used to only be able for thousands of dollars, I think. And that would be like, I guess, a Sonos player he's probably referring to. That's cool. I guess it all depends on the setup of your house. If my house was set up that way, I guess, and I could just walk from room to room and just hear the same sound, that is pretty cool. I didn't think about that. Thank you very much, Dave.
Well, in your defense, at launch, I don't think it was able to do this. It does look like around December 10th, it got more functionality, even though it's the same hardware, where you can do now high res audio and the multi room streaming feature. That to me is something, to be honest, I love the idea of. I would love to be able to have multiple stuff around my house, hit play on a podcast, and be, you know, carrying a basket of laundry up the stairs, the two flights, and hear along the way, I'm listening to my podcast the whole time. That'd be fantastic. But I'm sure if I did that, my wife would say, I'm trying to watch TV.
I was going
to
say, this is the only week you could actually use that.
Yes.
I'd like to use a Raspberry Pi for that.
I used to use an FM transmitter for that. I would just have FM radios in every house, in every room, and but I wouldn't leave them all on at the same time. I would just, when I moved into a different room, I'd just turn on the radio to 88. They were all set to 88.3, and I just listened to podcasts throughout the house.
Yeah, then I'll see. Now, the Pis technically could do it, Brian. There's no reason why it can't, but I don't know of any software that exists that will allow you to sync them all together, because it's really easy to have multiple Pis set up and stream content to all three of them. But to have them synced to all play at the exact same time, that's where I think you need a little bit of a voodoo going on.
Now, we were talking about the somewhat similar situation with the Amazon Echo last episode. And I made mention of having something like a communicator or a pen or something on your person that you can use to pick up your voice and sense where you are in the house and so forth. And something like that would be pretty decent. I mean, if Amazon were to, you know, pay attention to this little tidbit I'm about to say, and even actually if we can perform it with a Raspberry Pi even. So, you know, this little brooch or pen would be able to track where you are in the house. And if you're playing music from room to room, if you have zones within your house, they have audio that you can pick up. The audio would travel wherever you would travel.
Yeah.
You know, that would be pretty decent. It may not work out if you have multiple people in the house that want to listen to the same music you're listening to. But, I mean, if you're by yourself, I think that would be kind of decent, you know?
Yeah, you could put a chip in your hand if you don't want to wear a brooch or a pin or something, too. And just walk around with an NFC, you know, warming up your palm. Nah, that's a good idea. And now that you mentioned the Echo, too, and Dor, you mentioned that's something that I've been noticing, too, with these small, cheap devices, where you buy something for $35 or $45 and or $179 in the Echoes thing, but you buy it for a certain amount and they just keep adding functionality to these things for no cost.
Right.
That's something I really like where they're going there. I mean, it's what a great value add, especially if you're an early adopter and you've got burn on a few things before, to have something that increases in value over time that actually adds little throws you a bone every now and then that, hey, thanks for you know, purchasing me. Now I can do this. I love how they're doing that now.
Yeah, I have to agree 100%.
Yeah, I mean, part of me believes, well, isn't that kind of like you're being a beta tester and then they're just giving you the normal features over time? But in reality, the companies that do this I actually like, because they're being more agile. And what I'm learning with my education with software development is, the best reasons to do agile is you have the opportunity to fail fast. If you don't fail once in doing something, you have not learned anything. You learn by failure. When you do something right, you don't really know what made it work. It just happened to work, and it could have been one of a million things. So when they do this kind of thing, just releasing something and then then constantly put out new features, constantly change things and tweak, I honestly like that, because I do think the overall user experience only gets better and better and better as time goes on. And I still have not heard a single person who owned an Echo and say, I had it for a couple of weeks, it sucked, and so I got rid of it. No, everybody loves it. Everybody is loving it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it any. No rummage sales have Echoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a secret sauce I think that they added on there. I think they're listening to the customer. You know, when I installed the app and I got to using it and things weren't really, certain things that didn't really work out that well, like, hey, you didn't hear me on that note, or, you know, I asked for this and you gave me that. There's immediate feedback that you give for that. And it's plain and it's simple and it's really easy. And, you know, some of the things that I voiced that, hey, this would be cool or that would be great. We're actually seeing some of that stuff. You know, I think they're listening to the voices, and I think that's a really good thing.
Very cool.
Here's our next email from Julian Overall. Julian writes, hey, Dor, Eric, and Cable Guy. I'd like to go for the giveaway, if I'm not too late, that is. My plan is to combine, essentially, two projects for home use, but not home automation. The main one is to come up with a Pi-powered doorbell system supplemented with a Pi Wi-Fi camera system. My old Model B would serve as a motion sensor camera, but the Pi 3 would be the brains behind the setup inside the house. Fitted with a suitable LCD screen, this could display the output of the camera upon request. Anyway, this is rather an ambitious project I have in mind. I think it's all doable, if quite time-consuming. I'd document all and present it somewhere. Should it get off the ground. As for the show, keep on bringing those recommendations for devices and projects. It's wonderful what can be achieved with a single board computer these days. Literally, the only limit is the imagination. Bye for now, Julian. Julian, that's a fantastic idea, and it sounds very similar. It sounds like the the video doorbell.
Video doorbell.
Yeah, sounds just like that. And I think it's kind of like food. You know, food is better when you prepare it at home. Projects like this are a lot more better when it's homegrown. And that's a great project, Julian.
Absolutely. And now the thing I'm going to throw out there is I'm going to put two links in the show. What he is looking at doing to me is, I don't want to say home automation, because to me, home automation is, you know, you have an event that gets triggered and then an action happens based upon this. He's trying to make like integration is the way I look at it with his house. So what I'm going to throw out there is a distribution called Linux MCE. And it really stands for Linux Media Center Edition. But that's what it started out as. What it really now has grown up to be is much more of a full-featured brains of a home system. This is the kind of system where if you set up, you can have a button connected to a Pi, you press the button, it triggers the back-end server that then rings the doorbell or even pings your phone, okay? And then via Linux MCE, you can hit a button on your phone or on a panel upstairs. It will then turn on a camera looking out your front door, just like the video doorbell. And there's no reason why you cannot integrate more things like IP cams into Linux MCE. So this might be the glue that he needs to get this project really started without having immense amount of work and configuration and figuring stuff out kind of thing.
I remember Linux MCE. If memory calls correctly, it didn't really do that well when it first launched. There was a lot of pain and a lot of growing.
Oh yeah, very, very, very painful from what I remember, yes.
Yeah, when I first saw that, my jaw hit the floor and I'm like, wow, that's cool. I need to do that. I mean, I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I don't want to insult Video Doorbell because I do think they have a good product and I do think they honestly strive to be a very safe product, but there's nothing safer than something you have complete control over.
Amen.
The next email is from Justin, and I think, Brian, you may have read this last week. I don't know if you want to look it over real quick and let me know what you think. It sounds really familiar.
Oh, yeah. No, this does sound familiar.
Okay. Well, I didn't see him in the list. That's why I'm adding him in that, and that's my excuse.
I can read it again if you want me to. I just it seems like it's from Justin. It says, hi, everyone. Justin here, and I just want to say hi. You guys are having a great and educative show. Don't have any mini PCs right now, but I'm waiting for my Pine 64 unit that I backed on Kickstarter, and I was also thinking on some Pi projects for the summer, like a weather station. Any suggestions? I'm also waiting for the Wyolink starter kit. It's not a mini PC, but it's a simple Internet of Things board for groove sensors. And you can find that at seedstudio.com. About the Zsun, I think it's a great find, and I would totally use it for syncing my music between my PC, phone, and car. Keep up the good work, Justin.
Yeah, very good call. As soon as I looked at the link, yes, we absolutely did talk about this last week. And here's my excuse for bringing it back up again. The Pine 64s reportedly have started to ship. So if you're an early backer on that, there's a good chance you're going to get your Pine 64 here soon. So that's really cool because the Pine 64 has the equivalent, I believe, processor to the Raspberry Pi 3. It's a quad-core 1.2, but you can even get a Pine with 2 gigs of RAM. It's going to be a wild card question of how much support is this going to get from the community, because they have some sort of journalistic angle, because they're getting press, they're getting coverage, people are talking about them, but it's a question of how many people are going to actually support them.
Yeah, and I'd like to see them get a lot of support, not just because who the founder is, but I mean, they have a really decent product here, and if it ranks up spec wise, you know, on paper with the Odroid C2 and the Raspberry Pi 3, man, this has got to look pretty good. And not only that, it's cheaper. Money talks, and that's all I got to say about that.
Very cool, very cool. So, okay, we have roughly, I'm going to say, 20 people total. 127, 143, about 15 people, 25 people. I don't know, whatever. We have a lot of people. Okay, I'm going to start from the top here. We have Lyle, Lord D, Captain Zero, Scott, Tom, Joel, Father Finch, Father Finch might have the best name ever. Jeff H, Stephen Ward, Aaron Turnbull, Crystal Anderson, Larry Topal, David Parker, Julian, and Justin. Brian picked the last winner, so I'm going to ask you if you can pick this.
I'm going to use Sanqui's online randomizer for this drawing, if that's okay.
Yes, absolutely, sure.
Hey, before you do that, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone that responded. I mean, we put the word out there on Google Plus, and we got a lot of plus ones and a lot of feedback, and obviously a lot of email and voicemail included. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for contributing. It's really good to have you folks out there listening.
Yeah, it looks like we have 15 submissions.
And I've 15, okay. I've been looking, you know, on all the sales sites, you know, where you can get good deals on stuff. And nobody had mentioned our giveaway on those sales sites. So we know these are actual genuine listeners, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And to be quite honest, I'm kind of happy other outlets did not advertise you can win a Raspberry Pi 3 here, because I don't like selling my soul. And the only people I see being advertised on those sites are people who I get the impression sell their soul. Just saying.
Okay, and I'm going to, just for fun, there's three hosts. I'm going to hit the generate button 3 times, and that'll be our number. 1, 2, 3, and it's number 4. And number 4 is, 1, 2, 3, Scott Schuster.
Scott is our winner. Yay!
Yep. Odd thing about the random generator, when I hit it the second time was 4, and the third time was 4. So that's very random.
Well, to be truly random means there is at least one time when you're going to click that button 10 times and get the same thing every time.
99% of the time, it works every time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just sent an email literally to Scott. So as soon as I get his address, I will ship it out. And what I mean by that is I hope to get it sent out.
Yeah, Scott, don't yell at Door. We've all tried to receive things in the mail from Door. It's just that there's a hang up, and I understand, because I totally have the same hang up personally. And I used to ship eBay for almost a living, and when you don't have to do it, it's hard to do it.
Yeah. Well, and my excuse is, when I leave in the morning, the post office is closed. When I get home from work, the post office is closed. I literally only get like one or two lunches every month. And when I do, it's typically picking my wife up lunch. And sorry, everybody out there, but nobody gets priority over my wife, even if you won something from us.
Awesome job. Cool stuff. So, you know what? I got in the mail today two brand new Raspberry Pi 2s, and I had a little extra Amazon points, from the Christmas shopping that I did, and I wanted to treat myself. What do you think? What do you think I should do with these two guys?
Well, honestly, the idea of the alarm clock that we got, I think, is genius and not ridiculously complex either. So I honestly like that idea a lot. And to be honest, I got a Raspberry Pi 1 and a Raspberry Pi 2 sitting here. So I'm going to start to investigate that for one of them for me.
Yeah, I agree. That does sound like a good idea. I was thinking of someone had made mention of a PBX system using the Raspberry Pi. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Asterisk, the Asterisk server.
I actually insulted the original creator of that in person at a conference. When he walked in the room, I said, "Are you old enough to be in this room?" Because he literally looked like he was, 18 years old. And it turns out he was 35, and he just looked good because he was stinking rich. Oh
my God. Okay. Brian, you're going to have to rewind for my simple brain. PBX server. What is that?
Yeah, PBX server is essentially, let me back up.
Is it telephone?
So, PBX,
I believe it's phone business exchange, maybe?
Yeah, it's a public exchange unit for businesses, even for your house, actually. But it's not just a PBX, but it does SIP protocol. So you can have this little box connected to the internet with a SIP phone, obviously with a switch too as well. And you can make and receive phone calls over the internet using SIP. And you would need to get a SIP provider too as well, which is dirt cheap money, a lot less expensive than your typical service provider. But the beauty of it is you manage it, you control it. You can, with a cool thing that I did at my job the other week was we had a circuit from, I think it was the Boston area going all the way down to the Cape. It was a layer 2 circuit. No IP at all, just all layer 2. And we had an Asterisk SIP server on an old Pentium PC. And we just had our laptops. I used my cell phone at one end. So I downloaded the SIP application on my cell phone, and the other guy had a laptop on the other end, and we just fired it up. We fired up the SIP server. We put in some, extensions, and we were able to call each other on my cell phone straight to his laptop via extension. I just dialed in 2424. That was his extension. It rang on the other end. It was crystal clear. And I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. I can set this up on a Raspberry Pi and do it in my house. Not so much the circuit itself, but I can make and receive phone calls and I control it. It's something that I built and I can control it. So I just thought that was a nifty idea.
The other thing you can do with an Asterisk server, which I think is cool, is hypothetically, I can use my normal phone number, have that still running, go to my box where where my phone line starts at, even if I have cable service and it's through Comcast or somebody, it still goes through that one beginning box. I can put an Asterisk server right there, and then what can happen is the phone rings, it silently picks up. You don't even hear the phone ring. It picks up and then prompts people, and you can say, if you want to talk to Brian, hit 1. If you want to talk to Eric, hit 2. If you want to talk to Dor, hit 3. And then if you hit 1, I can actually reroute the call to Brian's cell phone because Brian logged into the system and said he's not in today, so it can be rerouted. And if you hit 2 to go to Eric, it can automatically route to voicemail because Eric's too busy. He works like a beast, kind of thing. And then if you hit 3, I can have the house phone ring here, but I can have it have a special ring. There's a lot of functionality with Asterisk that you can literally turn your home phone system into a enterprise-grade functionality phone system at near zero cost. It really is one of those amazing things that have been made, and it doesn't get the recognition it really deserves.
No, I fully agree with that. And yeah, the beauty of it is you can answer your house phone when you're not at home, you know?
Yeah, and I did put a link in the notes to raspberry-asterisk.org. It's not the only one out there, but it is one of the ones out there that is basically a pre-configured Debian image. You download, you put on your Pi, and voila, you're ready to roll.
Wow.
Yeah, just good stuff. And this is the kind of functionality where spousal approval is definitely needed, but I'll say this, with the functionality you can get out of it, there's no reason why every single person in your house would not be completely satisfied with it.
Right, right. Talk about a voicemail box for every person, and and you can control it. So I know, guys, I know this is not the Raspberry Pi show, so please tell me you have something other than the Raspberry Pi to talk about.
Well, the Pine 64s are shipping.
I've got a little box called a UMA for my telephone service, but as a Raspberry Pi, the Raspberry Pi sits next to it. No, I'm just
kidding. Right. Well, there was something else too. Yeah. Okay, I looked at this earlier today too. Okay, I have my Banana Pro doing my own cloud instance, and I'm loving it. It's working really good. But I thought to myself, why can't I do a similar type functionality, but instead of doing synchronization of certain key folders, why can't I do legitimate backups? And I did a backups article, and of course it's mentioning the Raspberry Pi, but this is really OS agnostic, because this application that it's using is called Backup PC, all one word, BackupPC. Okay, the reason why I really like this as a backup solution is anything that is a share on a network, okay, you can point this server toward, give it the username and password, and it can do on-the-fly backups, revisions of the backups, incremental backups, and easy to restore. That, to me, is the most blessed feature in this product, is it is obsessively easy to restore content on that remote computer. So with any kind of Pi and a connected drive, you can have yourself a centralized backup server for your entire house, map key drives from it to different computers all over the house, and as long as they have network shares turned on, you can log into those shares, connect to those shares, configure it, and back everything up painlessly. You don't have to do any extra work. Once you have it set up to do backups, it just automatically does it. I'm a big fan of that software.
Oh, man, I think I have a little drool on my mouth. Hold on. That is awesome. That is, you got, oh man. Dor, where did you find this?
Well, the dirty secret is I first heard about this software from Mark Cockrell from Element OP on his podcast. I believe it was the Tightwad Tech. And then I went and looked at some of the backup software, PC Backup. And PC Backup to me, Backup PC. Backup PC to me was one of the most simplistic yet mature backup solutions I've ever seen. It just works, and it just works really good. It's completely free as in beer, free as in speech, GPL software out there. If you just go to backuppc.sourceforge.net, and yes, it's still at SourceForge, I'm sorry. And if you look at the screenshots to it, what you quickly learn is this is not some janky, horrible command line version PC stuff. It's all GUI on a web browser, and it is using trusted technologies like Samba, SSH, and rsync on its back end. So it really does work, and it really does work good.
Wow. Now that goes hand in hand with the Western Digital Labs hard drive that they made specifically for the Raspberry Pi. This is the 314 gig USB hard drive.
Yes.
That would be a perfect marriage.
Oh yeah, I agree. And I'll say the size of that drive is very exact like that for a very good reason. I remember Scott Moulton talking about this a while ago. Once you get above a certain size disk, then it has a certain number of discs in it and trays and arms on it kind of thing, which means it's going to need more power to run. This is why larger laptop drives typically cost more, because they don't have as much power going to them, but they need to do the same functionality. This drive is sized to not overtax the Raspberry Pi for power. So you are assured it's going to work, and it's going to work good. So if you know, and honestly, I'm literally tempted to buy one of these things because they are cheap. I can't remember how much they are.
It's like $54.
Yeah, it was a bad.
Yeah, it was a good price. I'm literally tempted to buy one of these things just to support Western Digital's choice to do this.
Good point.
Because I don't need it. I don't need it. It's with a net price of $31.42.
That's what it costs for that hard drive?
With the suggested retail price of $45, but right now you can get it for $31.
All right, I'm gonna order one.
Dyslexia.
I'm gonna order one and just set up I was gonna set up a Plex server, but maybe I'll do a XBMC or whatever it's called now. Yeah,
gotcha.
Was it Miro? No, it's not Miro.
XBMC or Cody.
I don't know why I can't remember Cody. Yeah, all right. Where are you seeing that price at, Dor?
If you go to store.wdc.com, they have it linked under, I believe it's, trying to figure out how to get there from that main site, because I have a deep link.
Yeah, so I ordered an HDMI. Did I tell you guys I ordered an HDMI monitor and it didn't come with an HDMI port on it? So I had to send it back. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, what? Acer. So I thought I'd save a little money, got an Acer refurbished monitor that said it had an HDMI port on it. I'm like, because I need a new monitor for these gadgets with HDMIs. And all of my monitors have, you know, VGA and DVI. So, the one adapter I was using wasn't working right, so I didn't have anything to plug it into. I was getting a little frustrated. I was like, all right, I'll just buy it. So I ordered it. It came. I slid it up out of the box. I saw all it had was a VGA port. I slid it right back down in the box and didn't even take any kind of a shrink wrap off of it, whatever. It just, like, no. So,
fail.
So I've got some money coming back. They just received it back to the Acer eBay store, and I'm gonna buy one of these. Because I did, and hey, I gotta give a shout out to Joe Heck. He offered me some more VGA to HDMI adapters or whatever I needed. But I did find one that works. So for now, I think I'm okay. Well, let's go with this one. But now that I've got that extra money going back into my PayPal account, I'm going to get one of these drives.
Yeah, I am going to have a link directly in the notes. I just added to the notes. You can see it's basically marked down. It is supposed to be $45, but right now, as this is being recorded, obviously, because I can't speak for another period of time,
you're that good.
It is $31.42.
Yes, and that's the Western Digital Pi drive, 314 gig, engineered for specifically the Raspberry Pi.
So the hard drive physical form factor is about the same size as the Raspberry Pi 2? Is it also like the rectangular size of it? I haven't really investigated this enough, I guess.
No, I'm pretty sure what makes it a quote-unquote Pi drive is it basically has a extra specialized, it looks like, port right on the front.
Oh.
Which is, I think, USB.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like from the images, it looks like a traditional hard drive with the outer casing and the rectangle shape to it. But Joe said, it doesn't have the special connections.
Yeah, it looks like it actually might be USB 3 by looking at the picture. Because USB 3, when it's the micro, it has the two pieces to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like. I don't know.
I would love to see USB 3 on the Raspberry Pi. I just know that's going to just push up the power requirements a little bit more, but man, that would be so much worth it.
Yeah, because the reason I like the Banana Pro is because it has SATA. The reason I like SATA is I know it has good throughput. I know USB 2 doesn't have USB, you know, its throughput isn't great. USB 3, that's where you start to get into some real heavy-duty good speeds.
Yeah,
right. Or just access directly to the CPU. I mean, if we can't get USB 3... give me direct access to the CPU and the memory.
Right. And man, Eric, I really do feel you. For some reason, every manufacturer is picking up on what printer manufacturers do, which is you buy a printer and they never put a printer cable in it. Other manufacturers figured out, oh, we can be chintzy too.
We can what?
Man.
We can be chintzy too and be cheap and not put in the cable that you obviously want.
Oh, I wasn't worried about not having the cable. It was the actual physical HDMI input on the back of the monitor, which it said it had when I ordered it. Yeah, it's just
That's a deal breaker.
Yeah, it's like I've got actually two more of these kind of monitors that I can't use right now. Having a third one and costing me $60 is not what I was looking forward to.
Now, it would be more comical if they sent you a VGA adapter to HDMI. Stuck it in the box.
Or an HDMI cable with this monitor that has no way to plug it into. It did come with a VGA cable, though, Dor, just, you know, for what it's worth.
Yeah, just in case you needed to, hit somebody. I don't know.
So what else have we found out there, guys?
Go ahead, Dor.
The other project I want to throw out there, because the guy mentioned speaker, if we look at line 118 of our notes, it was Hackaday, which I will say, I'm liking Hackaday even more as time goes on. There's a guy who made a really good, basically a chip-enabled set of speakers. So a chip is the $9 mini computer. He basically hooked to the back of a set of speakers a amp, a power source, a chip, and via his phone, he's able to control the music that's being played out of them. I just love the idea of taking good quality older speakers, spending just a little bit of money on them, you know, $9 for the actual computer, and the rest is just the amp and the power source. And then you have yourself a rebirthed speaker set that can play whatever you want. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just a really good
idea. I spoke
idea.
About not seeing echoes at the rummage sales earlier. Last summer, I went to a rummage sale, and there was a set of Harman Kardon computer speakers, but it had like an 8-inch subwoofer, and I'll tell you what, it was $1. It came with all cords, and it came with the owner's manual and everything. I mean, somebody took really good care of this back in the day, and it was they probably bought it with their Pentium 2 or something, but I bet it was a $250 stereo or computer speaker set in its time. I plugged that in. I've got that out in my garage, and it was one of the best sounding speakers in my house. I mean, as far as, and I've got it hooked up out there, and I just hook my Android phone into it or my tablet and listen to it blasting. It's got a nice amplifier built into it and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like a real big time podcasting host. I ordered this while we were live on the show, so now I can talk about
good man.
It and all that stuff.
Nice. Kind of like Amazon tablets. You can order them by the six pack, right?
That's pretty cool, too. I tried to get that through for work, but they wouldn't go for it. One of the aldermen's like, ha! Yeah, well, maybe next time.
Hey, that speaker project, that reminds me from being a kid, you know, getting your first car. You want to put the Alpine pull-out head unit in with the big kickers in the back. And, man, I used to be all into that, you know, hooking up the amplifier and just banging the tunes. But I had a similar idea a few years ago, doing just that with the rat. I've always wanted to do that, you know, get an amplifier, hook up a Pi and connect it to an old kicker box or some old speakers and see what it would do. But, just never got around to doing it. But
are you talking?
That's a good inspirational project.
Are you talking 12 volt, like a car amp, that type of thing? Or are you looking like
an indoor? Yeah. You know, probably like a car amp would probably be not efficient, but more compact, you know. Nothing huge, nothing like a monster or anything, but just enough to drive the speaker a little bit.
I just bought this truck a couple weeks ago from a police auction, and it was a Seizure, right? So this truck it's actually the name of the speaker is called Kicker. It's got this big, I think it's probably 12-inch, maybe 14-inch speaker box with a speaker in it, Alpine amplifier mounted to the floor. And I'll tell you what, the technology has come a long way in the head units. It's just got, I don't even know, I think it may be a Sony or something. But as soon as I get into this truck, I turn it on, it automatically connects. It says Nexus 5X right on my screen, and then it starts playing Google Music. And I just hit the button right on the head unit to go to the next song. I don't touch anything on my phone at all, and it just all works. I'm so impressed with this thing. I mean, this stereo, to me, is worth every bit what I paid for the whole truck. And it sounds really good, too. It's bringing back some of my youth, and it's good to listen to some some dubstep and stuff with some good bass to it. Feel it in your chest.
Nice.
I'll take your word on that.
I'll come pick you up, Dor. We'll go cruising. We'll go cruising for chicks. Get a babysitter.
Yeah,
okay. Get a babysitter. I have a challenge. I have a challenge for our listeners. And I got a problem. So let me say my problem, then I'll say the challenge. My wife and I, we purchased a 2005 Toyota Sienna way back when my first son was born. And it's getting a little long on the tooth. You know, we outright own the car. We've owned it for many years. But the head unit in the vehicle, it's got the GPS head unit with the, you know, the DVD navigation and everything and the infotainment system. It was cool back then. Now it's a little long on the tooth. It's downright annoying. In fact, it's so annoying that the screen keeps flashing, going in and out. The audio is going in and out. And I'm like, man, we need to replace this. So I went online to see, you know, how much is going to cost to get a replacement for this head unit? Between $400 and $600.
Oh my.
Oh yeah. For a replacement head unit for this thing.
Oh, for a stock one.
So for a stock one. Yeah. And we're like, no way. So then I'm looking for, you know, for an updated one, you know, something with Bluetooth in it and, you know, all the connections. It's just as much or if not even more. So I'm like, well, can I repair it? And, you know, like I contacted someone in New York and they're like, yeah, I can fix it for you for a couple $100. I don't know. I'm cheap. I'm real cheap. So now I'm thinking, okay, this is the time for the mini PC to shine. What can I do inside this vehicle that'll turn it inside out and pimp my ride so that my wife will be happy, my kids will be happy, and they can get a nice infotainment system using a mini PC?
First thing that pops into my head is, you mentioned it earlier, an Amazon tablet for $50. And do some soldering and just export, you know, headphone jack out into the wiring of the speakers of that thing. I mean, you might want to run it into an amplifier though from the thing. I don't know if you can run Android Auto off of that, but you could at least have Bluetooth then. You could have movies saved on it. You could definitely use the, well, maybe not the Amazon one. Maybe you have to do like a Nexus 7, but you could do the maps. All you have to do is, while you're on Wi-Fi in your driveway, you know, save some offline maps, and you'd have all of your navigation you need.
Yeah. I have wanted for years for them to stop offering any kind of head unit in a car and just offer a slot, a standardized shape slot for a tablet to just click in.
Aux jack and Bluetooth. Because, that's all you need.
Yeah, because my logic is the best turn-by-turn directions are on those devices. And if you're driving, that's going to be at least some of your need for it. And like, you know, you, as long as you're okay with touching it, then to me that's good. I understand the safety features with when the car's moving, it's supposed to be disabled. And I understand the safety features with nothing should be, I believe it is in America, more than 6 clicks deep. If it's more than 6 or 7 clicks deep, they cannot release it to the auto manufacturers, which is why those interfaces are typically less robust, is the word I'll use. But I say safety, schmafety. Make something cool.
Throw caution to the wind. Heck yeah.
Okay, the first day I get a car of any kind, I go to a parking lot and I slam the gas as much as I can, and I slam the brakes and I slam the gas and turn the wheel. I want to know the limitations of the car. And as the same goes with myself, I believe I know my limitations when I'm driving. So I try not to overstep those boundaries, kind of thing. When I'm driving by myself, I can, you know, drive, click, Vox, click, you know, and do stuff. It isn't like I'm sitting there staring at my phone. You know what I mean? And I haven't killed anybody driving yet. So I think I'm doing okay.
I think we got to knock on wood for that one.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to just, I think the tablet would work. I mean, if you want to upgrade your whole experience, get a connected tablet with a SIM card and you know, get a data plan for it even. And then you can have a Wi-Fi hotspot. Everybody can be on their own devices, just like the new Chevy or something, you know?
Yeah. I think the challenge of it is finding a head unit or finding a way to connect a tablet screen or, like you said, the tablet to the internal speakers, because we have to have the backup camera. We have the controls on the steering wheel that has to be integrated in.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Finding something like that. That you can do with the GPIO ports on a Pi. But I think having on each headrest of the vehicle where the kids sit, a cheap Raspberry Pi, a cheap 7-inch tablet, and some Bluetooth headphones. I found on Amazon some Bluetooth headphones like $20, you know. I don't mind dropping 3 or 4 of those, you know, that would be pretty, pretty decent versus dropping $600 on one head unit.
Right.
I would rather do that, you know. I think you're on. Yeah. I think you guys are onto something.
Do you?
Definitely worth digging into.
Do you use your controls on the steering wheel for controlling your radio and stuff? I just realized the other day that my Cadillac even has them. I've never touched them until I accidentally did it the other day. I thought I was hitting the cruise button, and I changed the station on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's with the minivan, it's got a bit of a reach to the knobs, so it's that much easier. But my I have a Ford Expedition. Can't remember the name of the car. Goodness gracious,
Explorer, Escape.
It's the Escape. Thank you very much. I have the Ford Escape, the hybrid model, and it's got the controls on the steering wheel, but it's such a short ride that, dude, I can like hit the knobs with my elbow on the dashboard. So I don't know I don't know why they have them there. Like you said, I digress.
Well, somebody will answer it, if, you know, and maybe we can give away your old head unit that flashes.
Yeah. So there's the thing about that. So I was doing some research on it, and come to find out there's a manufacturing defect. There's a board that needs to be replaced in order to fix these things. So I'm like really searching hard to figure out how to replace that board, you know, and I'd rather do it myself than pay someone $200 to replace a board.
You really, you know, really, you don't want to replace that board. You want to replace all the boards in that with something else. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, you go on YouTube, there's a ton of YouTube videos of people who have mounted tablets into their dashes. That's, for a while, that, I don't know, it may still be, but I know that for a while that was the thing to do. 7-inch tablets work pretty good in a dashboard. And there's a lot of customized launchers that you can have huge buttons that makes that pretty easy to reach. But yet, nice. You know, it is a reach in your van. You may have to have a swing arm or something.
Hey, do you have a boat, Eric?
I don't yet. Why? You got one for sale? I do. I take it. I have a canoe. I don't know if that counts.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a canoe. Why do you ask?
Well, I was doing some digging, and I found this really cool mini PC. It's called the Stealth WPC-75F Weatherproof Mini PC. Let's see who makes this thing. It's a pretty interesting kit because I don't think I've ever seen a waterproof mini PC. I'm sure they make them. You know, I've seen dustproof. You know, it's dust resistant, but nothing to the likes of being waterproof. So this thing is it's an Intel Core i7 mobile Intel chip, to 2.8 gigs of horsepower there, 4 megs of cache memory. It's a DC input. Dimensions about 10 inches by 18 inches by 2 inches, and runs Windows, runs Linux. It's fanless. Very, very low power consumption. But what I found very interesting are the ports on the back of it. So it looks like a rectangle black slab. But on the back of it, it's got these little screw type ports on it that keep the water from getting inside this unit. Mm. And from left to right, you know, it's got DC VGA, doesn't have HDMI. Wish I had HDMI, but it doesn't. Not a total loss. It's got DC input, VGA, LAN 1 and 2. I found that to be very interesting. It's got 2 LAN ports on it, a COM port, a serial, and 2 USB 2.0 ports on it. And it comes with cables. You know, these little special lock-in, screw-in type cables will attach to these ports where it would have on the opposite end, you know, your USB port and your VGA and your serial connections. I found this to be very, very unique. The thing I don't like about it is that it's over $2,000. Yes, very expensive. Very unique, but again, very expensive. So if any of you guys out there or have boats or want to entertain and you have a little extra money to spend, I think this is a pretty good unit.
I could see it.
To start.
Like a Coast Guard or Department of Natural Resources boat could use this, and then they could use that comm port to print out tickets to people off their dot matrix printer, and they could hook up a screen to it to, you know, they could run people's registrations real quick as they drive by them or something.
Yeah.
Well, you say that. The only thing that goes to my head is the movie Twister and how they could use this. Yeah. I will say it's a little bit physically bigger than I thought it would be. It isn't big. It isn't big at all. It's just a little bit bigger than I thought it'd be. And I think it's because to be completely sealed in and to have those custom ports in the back does require just a little bit more space. But if you need waterproof, and I think the word is ruggedized,
yeah.
It always costs more money. I mean, Panasonic Toughbooks back in the day when laptops were like $800 were still almost $3,000.
Toughbooks are still expensive.
Yeah, so I understand paying more money, a premium dollar amount, and it looks like you're getting good hardware, not fantastic, crazy hardware, but good hardware. You're getting a genuine Intel i7 processor, fanless. Mm-hmm. That right there says a whole lot. And yeah, right from the order page, you can configure it to use Ubuntu Linux 64-bit, which technically should bring the price down to just below $2,000.
This would be good for a Segway cop, the parking ticket meter reader.
Sure. Yeah, or on maybe like a hover round or a gopher or, you know, something like that. Like for, you know, a ham vent.
It could be a little rascal and a little rascal.
Yeah. Yeah, they have here scientific research, military use, marine use, public safety unit, transportation, mining, telecommunications market.
I agree with all of that.
Yeah. Well, a good list of things here.
Or if you're just really clumsy and you spill stuff a lot, you know, might be worth the extra couple bucks to protect yourself.
Right.
Or you're in a motor home and everything's really close and you just, you know, don't want it. The only comfortable place to put it is right by the sink.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's a thought. Oh, go ahead.
No. When you're in an RV, you don't have a lot of space, so you do want something small.
No, I agree. Well, I was wondering, and I probably should do a little research on this to see who has used a Raspberry Pi in this situation where they weatherized it, you know, and used it on their boat. I'd like to,
see that. Ooh. I've done it. All I've done, literally, is I take a battery pack, a small battery pack, with USB right to the Raspberry Pi, and I put it all in a Ziploc bag, and I zip it up. I've done that. And and technically it's waterproof.
Oh, it's water resistant.
Well, it technically could have been submerged. I didn't suck all the air out, so it would have floated.
When I go in the canoe, I do two Ziplocs on my phone. That's how I waterproof it.
Yeah.
Oh, my wife and I bought these little airtight containers that when we, you know, go out in the canoe or whatever, we put our phones in this little airtight box and you clamp it down and nothing's getting in there. But the only bad thing is it's airtight. There's no holes, so you can't hear any audio. You can't hear anything.
Ziplocs are nice. You can still use it through a Ziploc. Touchscreen still works. And you can listen. Listen to the speaker still, too.
There you go.
Phone calls.
That's the way to
do it. Yeah, we'll have to go canoeing sometime, Brian. I didn't realize you had a canoe, too.
Oh, yeah. I would love to canoe. Yeah, we go camping every year up in Maine.
Well, from a longtime Podnuts person, follow far behind Eric, because once in a while he goes through swarms of thousands of spiders, and I don't encourage you to do that.
Lived and learned, or I'm not going through the tubes no more.
Good man.
There's those tubes that go underneath roads. You ever been? You know, don't go through those with a canoe. Unless you got a flamethrower mounted at the front and you burn them all off first.
Oh, man. Nah, it doesn't sound like fun. I hate spiders.
Made me want to jump out of the boat. There were so many.
That's pretty bad.
Ruined my whole family because that was their first trip.
Oh, man.
I'm like, come on, let's try this.
Sounds
ditch.
Like a cable story I can share with you. Yeah, right?
No, it wasn't a ditch. I got to get this thing in the water quick. Come on, yeah, right there.
So what do you got, Eric? You got anything for us?
No, I'm just waiting for my, I was waiting for my monitor refund and a new monitor, but now I'm waiting for my hard drive. No, I've got Jesse installed on this Raspberry Pi. I started looking into my garage door project on the Arduino. There's a lot of electronic knowledge that I lack as far as the usage of transistors and resistors to keep from burning up your board. So I've got some learning to do. I don't know enough about that stuff yet to start working with these breadboards and making sure I don't burn up stuff, like cross feeding and back electric current going the wrong way and things like that.
Yeah, didn't someone share with us a couple of episodes ago about a Udemy, if I'm pronouncing that properly, the free education online site where you can learn about basic electronics?
Yeah, that was a edX.
EdX, yeah.
EdX.
Site.
Thank you, sir. I found that stuff to be fascinating. I love online education.
Because I agree with Dor. I mean, I want to learn from my mistakes, but I also kind of want the thing to work when I build it.
You don't want to burn stuff.
Because then I really won't know what's wrong. Then I'll just keep building it again and again with the burn-up parts, and I won't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
If you can fail soft. Don't fail hard. I got a quick tip I want to bring. All the mini computers I have, one of the first things people like to do when they have a brand new setup is do like a performance benchmarking of some kind. I always like to do speed test. And my tip is never do a speed test in a browser on a mini computer. I never get good results. And when I say I never get good results, the results I get seem impossible. I know I'm getting better speeds than what I'm seeing in there. So in any of these Debian-based distributions, all you got to do is a sudo apt-get install, and then just start typing the word speed and hit tab. And what you'll find is a speed test -CLI. CLI stands for command line interface. Once it's installed, you just type speed test -CLI, hit enter. It will get a list of servers based upon your location. Pick a server that's close to you, and then it will do a download test, which takes like 5-10 seconds, and then it'll do an upload test, which takes like 2 to 5 seconds. And when I do my browser test, I'm literally getting numbers like 8 megs down and 16 megs up, you know, which makes no sense whatsoever. When I do my command line, I'm getting 80 megs down, 61 megs up, which is much more reasonable to what I'm actually getting. So if you do speed test, I've never seen a good browser-based one give me good, accurate speed results on my mini computers.
Yeah, my first
good little tip, Dor.
My first test is YouTube. That's my benchmark right off. The first thing I do when I get a distro installed on there, YouTube.
Right. Well, that tests three things, I'll tell you that. It tests your bandwidth speed, it tests your graphics ability, and it tests your browser performance, because it's in the browser, it's more than likely using WebM with YouTube, and it's really taxing. It taxes the graphics to me more than playing a high-quality video over Samba or through Kodi or something. YouTube seems to be a little bit more stressful. So if it does perform good on YouTube, you can be rest assured. If you're streaming content over your network, you'll see better results.
Yeah.
That reminds me of a network bandwidth tester called iPerf. I don't know if you've guys heard of that before. Lowercase iPerf. It's a tool for achieving measurements of a maximum bandwidth on IP networks. So it supports all kinds of various parameters relating to timing and buffers and all certain protocols like TCP, UDP, SCTV, IP version 4, IP version 6. And you would have it set up in a client-server relationship. So you would need to download the server version on your laptop or desktop, and then the client version would be on the actual device that you're testing. And it will give you like real network speeds, you know. So if you obviously get a 10/100 network card, you're not going to see the full 100 megs per second. Just because of all the overhead with TCP, you'll probably end up getting like in the high 90s, maybe even low 90s, probably like the high 80s, depending on how much overhead you have. But this is a real good tool to say, if I'm having slow speeds constantly with the tool that you're referring to, Dort, you can use something like this to say, is my network card doing what it should be doing? You know,
right? Is it in my network, in my router, on the internet, or something else?
Right. Yeah, and it runs on Windows, Linux, Android, Mac OS X, FreeBSD. Oh, blah 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 blah. The list goes on. Check out the website. It's pretty good. iPerf. I think it's .rf.
FR. It's French because you know FR. The French Sorry. Make good stuff.
Yes, they do. Thank you, guys. Good stuff.
Very cool.
That's about all I have tonight, Brian. Hopefully by next week. Oh, and oh, by the way, just since I ordered that during the show, free shipping, too, on top of that, even with only a $30 order. So thank you, Western Digital. Yeah, totals $33.38 with tax. No, zero for shipping. Oh.
That's awesome. I got to get me one of these things. Yeah, $31.42. Add to the cart. Regular price, yeah, that's on sale. Like you said, definitely get these.
It's Pi. I wonder if it's a Pi Day sale because it's a 3.14 gigabyte drive. The price is 3.142. Mm-hmm, that must be what's going on. Even though today's just a couple days after Pi Day.
Well, yeah. Obviously, somebody at Western Digital is a genuine nerd. I will say, and I mean that with love in my heart.
He just nerded his way right into my sale, so I'm in.
There you go.
I love the geek stuff. Absolutely. So what about you, Dor? What else do you have?
I've been really tempted to now look at clustering a little bit closer. I literally have no idea what's involved in creating a Beowulf cluster, except for multiple processors. You know, that's really about all I know about it. And I did put a couple links in our notes. Unfortunately, they're just like static PDF links. So it's like, line 99 and 100, I'm sorry, line 100 goes directly to a PDF that extremely dictates step by step by step how you can make a Beowulf cluster. Everything I'm reading about it tells me it's not Raspberry Pi specific, so I should be able to hypothetically buy another Odroid C2 and make myself a cluster. Now, what I got to figure out is, what I'm pretty sure is, 2 doesn't make a cluster. Because I believe you always have to have the one command module and then 2 underneath it being to make it a actual cluster. To have one command module and one under it isn't really a cluster. It's just you're offloading one computer's performance to the other. So you got to have 3, I think, in order to make an actual cluster, which means it might take me a little bit to get everything in line to do it. Unless, of course, I can do an Odroid, a Banana Pro, and a Raspberry Pi in a cluster. If I can combine hardware like that, then I can do it much, much quicker. And I will say the main reason I'm looking at this is I did look at the eMMC stuff for the Odroid, and I was thinking I was going to buy that next. The performance numbers I'm seeing aren't overwhelmingly compelling for me to buy one of those eMMC, like SSD-like chips to put on the back of the Odroid. The speed I'm getting out of my high-end SanDisk is probably very competitive with that eMMC. So instead of giving a the Meridroid more money by buying an eMMC, I'm just going to buy a second Odroid.
I've always thought about doing clusters ways back, but I was just so new into networking that I just didn't even pursue it. But it seemed like something really fascinating to do. Now, I challenge you. I think that would be great. And to boot, I'm curious if you would be able to do a podcast show using some clustered mini PCs. We talked about that before.
Well, yeah, that's going to be my goal. Can I do good recording on it? And can I do any level of post processing on it? And I'm willing to believe if I can get the power of 2 C2s working in conjunction, I'm willing to bet it will be acceptable.
That would be awesome. That would be wicked awesome.
Dor, that storage, though, the EMC, is that, what was it? EEMC? EMC.
Anyway, I think it's EMMC. Yeah. Okay,
so that interface, the advantage of it was just that you can get larger, bigger hard, bigger space, more storage on that.
No, it's supposed to be more like comparing a USB thumb drive to an SSD. With the SSD, you get more performance, more speed, and that's what you're supposed to be getting with the EMMC. But my logic is more than likely the SD card interface is that good, and the SD cards that I'm using is that good that it's not over, you know, to get the EMMC is not, I don't want to say not worth the money, because it's the EMMC I want is literally like $50. It's more expensive than the Odroid 2 itself. I'm thinking it's probably not a good bang for the buck.
But the size is comparable as far as memory on it.
Smaller. I believe you can get now, I believe in the Odroid supports, if I'm not mistaken, a 2 terabyte SD card.
Oh.
Where the EMMC, I believe, only goes up right now to 64 gigs, I think.
So on a regular computer, you're using different data channels, so that's much faster. But you're just not seeing it on this.
Well, from what I'm seeing on other people reporting numbers, it doesn't look like it's great. Yeah.
It's good to know. Oops.
Well, I just want to encourage everyone to swing on by the Google Plus site there, the community. That's a happening community. It's, almost 300 people now.
Nice.
I believe it's like 249, which is cool.
Yeah, it is. That just keeps growing. It's pretty amazing. I really like that community. I like Google Plus in general.
I try. In fact, I just got tasked with taking over the Facebook page for the city, and it is such the interface is. I don't understand how people can. I don't know. I'm gonna have to learn, but it's a tough interface to get used to. You think it should be super simple, and I don't know. They've got everything just scattered everywhere. It's just full of ads all over the place, and I don't see why anybody would spend time on that, but. That is the way of the future, and I'm just being an old curmudgeon, I think.
No.
I don't know. I don't get it. Don't get it.
But, Eric, it's what plants
grow. Yeah, that's true. It does have electrolytes.
It's one big experimental melting pot. It's like the human experiment.
Yeah, so I'll be a guinea pig in that experiment room now. So enjoy me. Look, check out Like Me, if you would, you know. No, you don't have to do that. Hit me up on Google Plus, though. That's better. I might engage you there. I might plus one something. I'll plus one something way before I'll like something or love, as they have now also.
Oh, yes, that's right. Gosh, I hope Google doesn't go in that direction. I'm sure they're going to do something.
Yeah, who knows? They'll change the interface, let you see the old way for a while, and then one day it won't be there. Google, stop doing that with Hangouts, though. Give us the old way back, please. Enough of my social media rant.
Yeah, I can go on for a while about that. Yeah, you can find me in the same place. I'll be hanging out at Google Plus. Come swing on by, give me a plus one, give me a shout, and let me know what's going on.
If you don't buy directly from the Western Digital Store, go to podnuts.com/Amazon for these little parts and pieces you're using for your projects too. That just helps out the network and helps us keep these shows coming to you for you. To listen to.
Amen to that. Thanks for that reminder, Ark. I appreciate that. I gotta head on by there.
Yeah, it's easy. Just I keep it in a browser. You know, my browser. Cause I'm always on Amazon. I'm a Prime member. You know, always on doing reviews for Amazon products, and that's just everything I buy just straight from there. Makes it easy. Bookmark it once, you'll never know.
Right. So what about you, Dora? Where can we find you?
The easiest place is just go to podnuts.com. You can click on the contact thing and send a email directly to a show, to the network, and that's the easiest way. Or you can just go on Google Plus, search for Door-to-Door Geek, all one word, and that's where I typically hang out. Or you can send us voicemails at 7076-PODNUT, like other people, or you can re-record audio on your phone or on your computer and send it to minipcshow@podnuts.com.
Awesome. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for today. And I don't know about you guys. I'm feeling pretty, pretty wrapped up tight here.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Take care, everyone.